Welcome to Messing About in Ships, episode number 19, April 17th, 2008. This week we bring you some listener comments, our sea stories with pirates, subsea cables and containers, and a riveting Titanic tale, our internet ports a call, and a music mashup. Welcome to episode 19 of Messing About in Ships. I'm Peter Mello from SeaFever.org, and my podcasting partner is Captain John Conrad of GCaptain.com. Hey, John, how's it going?
Good evening, Peter. It's going great. How are you?
Good, good. How's the weather out there?
It's about 25 knots, so neither here nor there.
Can you feel that on your ship?
Yeah, we're pretty stable. Our main advantage being dynamically positioned, meaning we got six thrusters rather than props. They're azipods, so they go 360. Three of them are up forward and three back aft. The real advantage, though, is that we can point the bow directly into the waves, and we usually have to split between the wind and waves and the currents. But having your bow right into the waves really improves the ride, so we can definitely feel it, but it's pretty smooth.
Good. Interesting. How's everything else out there? How long are you on for this time?
For our new listeners, I'm on a drill ship in the Gulf of Mexico, so you can definitely look that up on GCaptain. Take a look. Everything else is going great.
Good. Good. When are you off?
I get off on Thursday.
Wow, so you're back home to see the baby again, see Jack and the baby and Cindy, that's good.
Yeah, I'm covering for my relief, so I'm going to do a few 2-week hitches, short ones. Should be good.
Good, good. Well, have a safe trip back. So what, you got any news for us this week you want to talk about?
Just general news, nothing out of the ordinary. We continue to work on GCaptain, moving to the magazine format. I do have the announcement for our longtime GCaptain readers, our plank owners. We're about to announce the return of the Artful Blogger. So he was a favorite columnist at GCaptain. He kind of refers to himself as the Hawkeye Pierce of the maritime world, and I sit back and tells it how he sees it.
So what happened to him?
Have you read any of his articles?
Yeah, I was always trying to figure it out. So who, where's he been?
He's been writing a book, actually. He's a best-selling author. His last book got, was up there. I think one of the top 10 in the New York Times bestseller list. And it was a compilation of different authors, that book, and now he's writing his own book and putting together a screenplay. So, and in fact, he was recently in New York and was chopping his screenplay around, and John Travolta walked in, got to show him the screenplay, which is about a life in the Navy, and Travolta was interested. So.
The life of an AB?
Coming out soon.
The life of an
Navy. Navy.
Oh, in the Navy.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
So this guy has a prior Navy, and now he works in the Merchant Marine. That's how I know him. And his stuff is real controversial. He holds nothing back, and he said that stuff his editors would be too happy to be associated with his name. So he uses the pen name, the Artful Blogger, and that really gives him the opportunity to call it how he sees it. And he's got a big chunk of his book done, and he's coming back to write for us. So excited about that.
Cool. Hey, speaking of the Navy, we had a T-shirt contest for the best placement of one of the Messing About in Ships posters, and I think we had one on a Navy ship, didn't we?
Absolutely. Commander Michael Young, commanding officer of the USS Whidbey Island, printed out our poster, Nothing About in Ships poster, and put it on the bow of the Woodby Island. And he was the winner of our contest. I actually thank you for reminding me. I have to send Commander Young his T-shirt. But you can, anyone can download the poster, which can be found on our website, nothingaboutinships.com. And good to get the word out.
Hey, and if you haven't seen the pictures of the poster up on this ship, go check it out. It's pretty awesome. Good stuff.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, cool stuff. We thank him for being a listener, and hopefully we can get him on here someday as a contributor. So look forward to that. What else is going on? Anything else?
We had another comment on the blog. So.
Yeah, we did, actually. We had a comment from Craig. He wrote... titled it Career Change. He says, I recently found your podcast. Thank you. I enjoy it. I have been on boats, recreational, since before I could walk. You talk a bit about jobs in the maritime fields. What opportunities exist for someone like me? I am about to turn 40. I am a project manager involved with building efficiency and renewable energy projects. What type of training would be involved? Thanks, Craig. So, this is a great question. What advice do you have for him?
Yeah, this is the jobs are the real hot topic everywhere in the maritime industry. And actually, we've our most popular threads on GCAPTAIN are variations of the same question: how do I get into either the maritime industry itself or specific segments of it? The biggest obstacle is the licensing issue. So you need. How it works is you start off as an ordinary seaman and you get a, I believe it's 3 years of sea time, take a short test and a few classes, and you qualify as AB seaman, able-bodied seaman. You do another few years and you can take your third mate exam. They just changed that. Though it used to be you could just take the exam right away. Now you have to go through 17 weeks training to get the, or a maritime academy to get the third mate's license. Your other option is to go to maritime academy, and you can either go, regardless of age, you can apply to the maritime academy. The normal program is a four-year program, and you get a third mate's license and a bachelor's degree. But your many of the academies, my alma mater, Fort Schuyler included, SUNY Maritime College, and that offer master's programs. So you can get your master's in marine transportation, the one Schuyler offers. During the summers, between your degree, you go out on the training ship, and you get your third mate's license. So it's, if you don't have a bachelor's or if you have a associate's right now, your credits will transfer to the bachelor's. If you already have a bachelor's, you can get a master's and go back to school or just take the 17 weeks of training. But the reason I bring this up is that it's a difficult industry to make a lateral move into. Everyone expects to go at a lower position than they currently are to move over, say, from advertising to publishing or in the normal corporate structure. But in the maritime world, you need a license, and licenses take time. So it's difficult to make a lateral move, meaning if you were going to get on a traditional ship, you'd have to start as a seaman at the bottom scrubbing decks. Now, there are a lot of other opportunities and kind of loopholes, ways around it, one being a... an offshore vessel or a drill ship, something I'm on, you can go and work for a drilling company or on a production platform, something like that, and get in as a, in an auxiliary role, maybe higher on as a project manager with Chevron or an oil company, and then you can make you can request that you get on a ship and spend some of your time in ship, work up the basic sea time, be ready to sit for an officer's license, bite the bullet, take those 17 weeks of classes, and then go on as an officer. but it is a difficult problem, and the only way is really to talk to people and really find these loopholes. Otherwise, you're going to really be taking a step down to move over. So it's doable. It just takes a lot of work, and it can all be found on GCaptain's forum. We have many threads and many people willing to help answer that question for you.
Yeah, great. Well, you know, I maybe disagree with you slightly because we don't really know what Craig does exactly. He's a project manager involved with building efficiency and renewable energy. But from my experience in working at Northeast Maritime Institute, we see a lot of opportunities for people to, although, as you say, might not be a lateral move, but it's a move into an entry-level position that it oftentimes is much better paying than entry-level positions in the normal corporate world. So you might take a step back slightly in responsibility, but you might have the opportunity to find some, a pretty good paying job at the get-go. One that has, like yourself, John, you know, you're on and off for certain stints. So you could be on for 3 weeks or a month on, a month off. Depends where you work. Could be on the rivers. We have find plenty of opportunities for people who come to Northeast Maritime Institute to find jobs on the Western rivers. Another field that you hadn't really brought up is the yacht industry is in dire need of qualified but experienced and good, hardworking people. So, there's a bunch of opportunities there. So can be more difficult if you're married and have children, as you know. But there are opportunities out there. And Craig, if you are interested, Northeast Maritime Institute runs a whole slew of courses from beginning basic safety training, AB courses on up. And you send me an email, I'll send you out a course catalog, and you can take a look. And if you have any questions, I can point you in the direction of somebody who might be able to answer them over there. So I think there's a bunch of opportunities. It's treated you okay, right, John?
The real need for people. There's a real need for people right now. So that the licensing issue is the only little step back. If you can get the training and find some of these alternative programs like Northeast Maritime, the need is definitely there. It's a good time to try. And we actually had there was a Cal Merritt. There's a ordinary seaman starting at the bottom I worked with, and he was actually a doctor, and his son went to Cal Maritime and enjoyed it, and the father said, I want to give this a try. So he took 2 weeks vacation from the hospital and took a short deployment out of the Union Hall. Liked it so much he joined up as ordinary seaman. So
there's a book.
Yes.
I'd love to read that
one. Definitely overqualified, but we were all happy to have a doctor on board.
How cool is that?
Huh. It's definitely doable. It's just you got to find something that meets your priorities.
Yeah. Hey, Craig, thanks for the great question. That was super. Really appreciate it, and I hope you keep listening, and hope to hear from you again. This week, Rob Stormer's back with his Stormwatch, so let's listen to Rob.
This is Robin Storm, and this is Stormwatch for the week of April 14th, 2008. European Theater Weather Watch. There are warnings of gales in Wright, Portland, Plymouth, Biscayne, Fitzroy, Seoul, Lundy, Fishawe, Shannon, Rockall, Maine, and Bailey. Low Fitzroy, 984, expected 100 nautical miles west of Shannon, 989 by 1900 hours Thursday. New low expected in Biscayne, 985 by the same time. The Atlantic low, 1012 is moving steadily east, expected Fitzroy 987 by the same time. High just north of Fair Isles, 1026, slow moving with a little change. Tropical storm outlook. Typhoon 02 Whiskey, Nagori, located approximately 295 nautical miles southeast of Henan, China, has tracked north-northwestward at 08 knots over the past 6 hours. The latest forecast track is to the east of the previous, based on the past 12 hours. Motion and current model guidance. Maximum significant wave heights at 161,800 is 22 feet. All mariners take notice. United States. As of January 1st, 2008, to this date, April 14th, there have been some 556 tornadoes nationwide with 73 fatalities. Make sure your loved ones are prepared for severe weather. Make sure they have a plan. Make sure that they know how to contact you and you know how to contact them. The Quarterly Marine Casualty Report. As of the end of March 31st, 2008, there have been some 382 maritime casualties worldwide. 88 have been due to heavy weather. Heavy weather still plays a heavy impact on shipping. All mariners, take notice. This has been Robin Storm for Messing About in Ships. Log on to Robin Storm at blogspot.com. May the fair winds be with you always.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much, Rob. We appreciate that as always. One other short thing I wanted to talk about, kind of got a very interesting job offer this week. I'm putting together some mashups that kind of aggregate all the news from the web and let you filter it. And I've done job mashups. So if you go to GCaptain, hit on tools, there's a maritime jobs. You click on that and it'll list the top, the latest 10 jobs from all the top maritime sites. And I just put up all the offshore jobs so you could get those as well. But I'm kind of deeply immersed in all this. And I went to I found a blog, All at Sea, and on it is a project manager for the largest FPSO in the world. And this FPSO is currently being built in Korea. And how what FPSOs are floating production and storage for offloading. Rigs in the Gulf of Mexico currently produce the production rigs. You have exploratory, which drill the wells, find the oil, and drill them. And then you get the production rigs, which come and actually sit there and pump the oil out to shore. It's all done through pipelines. In less developed countries where they don't have the subsea infrastructure, and starting now in the Gulf of Mexico, as we go deeper and deeper out, you can't extend, it's more difficult to extend the pipeline. They take these FPSOs, which are basically super tankers. Some of them actually are converted tankers. The largest tanker in the world, the Nock Nevis, the largest one ever built, was actually recently converted to an FPSO. I don't believe it's currently in service, which makes this one they're building going to be the largest. And they are taking it from Korea to its operational area in Nigeria. And the blog I read was from the project manager saying, I know this is a real long shot here, but we are in desperate need of a captain of the for the voyage. And if anyone happens to be reading this blog who has an unlimited Master Mariner license and wants to take an interesting trip across the Indian Ocean, please send me an email.
Wow.
So I did just that. I'm sure they have other candidates, and I'm not sure it'll work out with the family schedule. But I thought it was really interesting that it really shows the power of Google and some of these mashups, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later, and help you find some really interesting opportunities and match people up. You know, here's a guy in need of a master mariner and with offshore experience and someone who's rounded the Cape of Good Hope, it said. And I happen to be sitting here on my computer and have all three of those. I just thought it was an interesting opportunity.
Very cool. Well, send pictures.
I will. Either way, however it goes, we'll provide the link to his blog, and you can read up on the building of this amazing ship.
Cool. Interesting. Look forward to seeing that. So we got our sea stories this week, and you want to jump in with yours? What are you going to talk about? What's the latest news?
Yeah, this has been a real interesting news week. We have the cruise ship that was hijacked off the coast of Somalia. You read up a little bit on this, haven't you, Peter?
Yeah, I have, yep.
It's one of the smaller cruise ships. It's more of a yacht. It's a really large yacht. And they were transiting from the Seychelles in the Indian Ocean, and they were looking to go through the Suez. When they got off the coast of Somalia, they were taken hostage by pirates in Somalia. Somalia is one of the real hotbeds of piracy, the other ones being Nigeria and the Malacca Straits. And the ingredients for piracy is really opportunity and availability, meaning that the pirates have opportunity to make money and there is an availability to ships. Nigeria, the availability comes from offshore drilling platforms. They have one of the largest oil reserves in the world and a very unstable government structure. The Malacca Straits is the other infamous one. All the traffic that's going between, say, Japan and Europe, anyone who wants to transit through that area needs to go through the Malacca Straits, and it's really narrow, difficult to navigate. And the busiest, probably the busiest single spot for shipping in the world, it's right next to Singapore. If you can look up Singapore on the map, it's just the west of that. And you go through the Singapore Straits and the Malacca Strait, and the ships really have to slow down in there, and there are a lot of traffic opportunities, and the pirates from Indonesia go. There the opportunity is basic theft. They usually have people who find out what's aboard the ship. Their sources tell them that there's a large cash reserve, and they kept safe. And they go and do basic robbery. In Somalia, what happens is more of a hostage situation. The local warlords will contract out these pirates to take over a ship. The warlords are not connected in any official way to the pirates, so it doesn't cost them any. And the opportunity for wealth is great. So these pirates go out, they take over a ship, and they take it hostage. And they're waiting for a ransom payment. And one of two things can happen. The pirates can get paid, or action can be taken against the pirates. And the pirates usually escalate what they're doing to the point of to increase the probability of getting paid. This has been a really hot topic because I'd have to look up the name of the company. The pirates were actually paid off last year by a Dutch company. And this time they tried on this large yacht, the La Fournat. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, I think so. It's a French sail. It's a French tall ship, right? It's a sailing yacht.
Yes. And they were hoping for payment, and instead they got the they got raided by the French military. The French sent a carrier group there and raided the ship, got everyone free. That brings the second controversy. There's call for the United Nations and its maritime branch, the IMO, to kind of provide security for these hotspots. This is something that NATO has also talked about in the past. And the U.S. actually keeps a task force there in case they have to ready in case the pirates do something extraordinary. So there's kind of debate now whether this is a good tactic and how do you get at the actual warlords who are sending these pirates out on these missions without having another Black Hawk Down type incident.
Yeah, well, Marine, I don't know if you saw it, and I got to confess I didn't check your coverage on this, but Marine Buzz, I did read earlier this week, actually did it yesterday, it looks like, wrote a post called Follow the French to Handle the Sea Pirates, and he has a pretty comprehensive post about the timeline and some pictures, including incredible pictures of the hostages getting off the ship, and the whole story's right there, so check it out. It's on marinebuzz.com.
The other stories quickly this week, we had the Empress of the West caught fire. This is the owned by the same company, Majestic Line, as the Queen of the North, which hit a rock and was abandoned off Juneau, Alaska last year. It was the first big story G Captain ever covered. She caught fire in the Columbia River, and everyone made it out okay. There were three minor casualties from crew members. There are a lot of questions as to the safety of Majestic Cruise Line and their manning procedure. We also had a story of subsea cables and going to Australia. This is an interesting one. The bandwidth in Australia is too low. They can't. Their biggest source of traffic is the United States, and they also get a lot of traffic from Europe. All this traffic has to be put on some, has to go somewhere. And where it normally goes is subsea cables. And after the internet crash of 2000, the cabling ships, these large ships that actually reel out of the cable across the ocean, went bankrupt. Companies were bankrupt. Tyco was a big one that was in the news. And other ships by more reputable companies kind of went to reserve status. WorldCom was another one, was in trouble. But now they are laying they're doing their first large project since that time. And we have pictures on the GCaptain blog. This huge cable is an amazing project. It's all to support four minuscule fiber optic cable. That's all that's inside. It was really interesting. And they attributed the cause to social media. So it's all the Australian readers reading blogs and participating on Facebook. And
listening to Messing About on Ships.
Absolutely.
That's really probably what dragged it down. We get a lot of listeners in Australia. Yeah, that was a great post. I enjoyed that post on your – especially those photos, some cool photos of the cables. It really kind of – I really didn't have a knowledge about the size of the cable, so that's very, very interesting.
It's really good. And the other real quick one is a shipping container shortage, if you can believe that, with the with the cost of the dollar nowadays, or the dollar taking a dive, the United States is starting to export stuff overseas. And, a combination of people finding alternative uses for containers, and it's really causing a shortage, which is an unexpected problem. With the amount of imports we've had, they usually, for a long time, they were trying to give these things away.
Yeah, Telstar Logistics, your friend over at Telstar Logistics did a great post about this week, and mentioned, I think particularly, there's some real issues in the Midwest where containers don't seem to make it that far, I guess, but there's a tremendous shortage there.
Yeah, and if you join up for Flickr last week, Peter's port Internet Port of the Week. This week you should go over to Flickr's Big Metal Box group. Search Big Metal Box on Flickr. It's a whole group of people who just enjoy containers.
How cool. Pictures. Are you a member?
Yes, I sure am.
Of Big Metal Box?
Yes. Oh, I don't have any pictures to contribute yet. I sure do enjoy looking.
Yeah, my story this week was one that appeared in today's New York Times, and although I didn't really blog about it, I did put a link to it in a post I wrote last night. At 11:40 last night, but in 1912, the Titanic hit the infamous iceberg that led to its demise. So I did a post last night right at precisely that time with a picture of the iceberg. But I put a link to this article, and the article in today's New York Times is In Weak Rivets, A Possible Key to Titanic's Doom. And it's a very interesting article about a bunch of researchers two people have been putting together a book, actually, on what could have possibly led to the sinking of the Titanic. And the conclusion that they came to was basically it came down to the rivets that the company, what's the name of the company there? Do you remember the name of the company? Let's see. Harland and Wolff in Belfast, Northern Ireland, was under a lot of pressure because at the same time they were building the three largest ships in the world. And they were really having a hard time finding quality rivets and riveters. And ultimately it's a feeling that that issue potentially led to the condition that led to the Titanic actually sinking. Particularly, I guess, that the rivets in the bow area where the bow and the stern, iron rivets, were chosen to be used, and those were the areas that had less stress than the central part of the hull where they used steel rivets. But anyway, it's an interesting article. Did you read it, John? Did you say you read it?
Yes, yeah, I read parts of it. I just learned about it recently when you told me. Rivets are interesting. The architects, both civil and naval, hate rivets because there's no really way. Each one has a slightly different stress ability, and in civil engineering, they really have gone to using nuts and bolts. They can actually calculate the tension and the torque wrenches, get it torqued up to the exact amount they want. On ships nowadays, everything's welded. All new ship construction is welded. So this isn't a problem that we see anymore. But it's a big part of history.
Yeah. At the end of the article, kind of the conclusion of the article here is quoted, "What emerged was a picture of a company stretched to the limit as it struggled to build the world's three biggest ships simultaneously. Dr. McCarthy also found evidence of complacency. For instance, the Board of Trade gave up testing iron for shipbuilding in 1901 because it saw iron metallurgy as a mature field, unlike the burgeoning world of steel." Dr. McCarthy said she enjoyed telling middle and high school students about the decade of rivet forensics as well as the revelations from the British archives. They get really mesmerized. That's why I love the story. People see it and get it mesmerized. So anyway, it's an interesting story on the anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. There's some cool old pictures as New York Times so often has some great multimedia stuff in their slideshows and graphics that are just really worthwhile. There's some incredible underwater photos and historic photos. So lots of good stuff. And probably one of the most impressive pictures is seeing the Titanic and her sister ship, the Olympic, side by side in the shipyard under construction. These old photos, I enjoy checking out these old photos. But anyway, we'll have a link in it in the show notes, and hope you check it out and enjoy it.
Yeah, well, the infographics. They're really neat.
Yeah, they do a great job, don't they? It's always every day I enjoy seeing what they put up there. Some great visualizations. So you have anything else on that story, or do you want to jump into the internet ports of call?
Yeah, let's jump in.
Okay, what do you got?
You go to D-Captain's blog, and then on the bar on the top, you click on blog roll. We have a Google search tool, a custom search engine, and these ones use special tools to kind of filter out the websites that we're looking for. The one on the blog roll is a real simple one. All it does is take all of the blogs that are in the blog roll and filters out the rest of the internet. So when you do a search on this one bar, you're only going to get stories from those blogs. The more advanced version of this is the Google CSE, Custom Search Engine. And right next to the blog roll bar is a little anchor with Google CSE. You click on that. And again, we filter out the rest of the internet. We handpick our sites. But we also label and do some more advanced filtering with the sites to make sure you get rid of what you want. So you enter a search term, and you'll be given options, container ships, tankers, and you can further dig down into the results and start filtering out more of the data. And this is one of the mashup results. One of the people we've been working closely is John over at Vessel Tracks, and he's getting into a new project, Dust Explosions, at blogspot.org, and he's actually writing an article for us about dust explosions on grain ships. But we've been working together trying to bring a new ways of finding information and really drilling down into it. Right after the blog roll, I did the TWIC map, which you can find in GCAPTAIN, and it shows all the TWIC sign-up locations around the country. And I'm really putting a lot of work on an all-inclusive tool. So the way we kind of perceive this happening is you take a ship's name, or better yet, their IMO number, which is a unique name that stays with a ship throughout her life. And you enter this number in, and you get pictures of the ship, you get its latest, last known location, and then you can start overlaying things like weather maps and other quality information. The other mashup I'm working on right now is for we won a contract for the redesign of the website marinemoney.com. It's a financial publication for the maritime world, and we're looking in there to kind of do the same sort of aggregation for financial stocks, but filter the results in a for the maritime world, categorize it by sections, container ship companies, dry bulk companies, and so forth, and display it in an interesting and useful way, that financial data. So I don't have a specific internet protocol this time. I point you to the blog roll and the Google custom search engine. But I'm really looking for your help. This website, GCAPTAIN, is, I just administer it. It's really a site for you, our readers. And this podcast is a podcast for you, our listeners. And we need your help. If you find any interesting mashups out in the internet, please put them on their comments on Messing Bound and Ships blog. Join us to them. And if you have anything specifically that you need, that you're looking for, note that as well. We can probably find a solution. And if you need it, you got an idea for an internet application, or you see something somewhere else that you'd like to bring into the maritime world, if you have that need, there are probably other mariners out there who also need it. And we hope to provide it for you.
It's always good stuff, John. You're always at the cutting edge of this stuff, especially in the maritime world. So we all appreciate what you do. And it's always interesting and fun. Keep up the great work. Good stuff.
What do you got, Peter?
Well, my internet protocol this week is the New Bedford Whaling Museum's website. The New Bedford Whaling Museum is really probably for me the spark that kind of lit my passion about ships when I was quite a little kid. I grew up nearby, and my family would go over to the Whaling Museum quite often, and school groups would go over there and tour the museum. And the museum's famous for having the largest ship model in the world. It's a model of a whaling ship. It's a half-scale model, so the model actually is 189 feet long. You can go aboard it, and when you're a young kid, it's actually perfectly proportioned to you. So when you're half size, the ship is actually very realistic to you. It's pretty incredible. Well, their website is they got a great website. They got a lot of information on there, a lot of good educational information on it, a lot of information about whaling, historical whaling. Some great teachers, guides about whaling and maritime history, and their current exhibits and some of their past exhibits are on there as well. So anybody who's interested in maritime history, maritime heritage, maritime culture should check it out. There's a lot there. You can actually purchase some photos from their archives, all kinds of things on there. So check it out. The address is whalingmuseum.org, and it's worth a look.
That ship is really great. I think that's one of my son Jack's favorite. When we visited you, we took a couple hours and went there, and we just had a great time. Really good family experience.
I'm actually working on a blog post right now about the ship, the ship model, which is currently under restoration. So the blog post should be up by the time this podcast is out, so check out my blog and you'll get a little bit about get some great video and some great pictures and I think an interesting story about the ship model. So it's called Lagoda, and it was actually a whale ship that sailed out of New Bedford in the early 1800s. The interesting thing about the ship model is the ship model was actually created by the same people who created the whaling ships that sailed out of New Bedford. You know, it was right around the same time, towards the end of the whaling era here. But the power, the value, I should say, of having this ship model made by the people who actually made the whale ships, and the ship model is obviously preserved within a building. So all this history of the art and science building these ships is kept alive in this incredible work of art. So anyway, I'm going to be posting about it. Check it out. And if you ever have the chance, go visit the museum. It's world class. So that wraps up our internet ports of call. Did you have any other kind of loose ends you want to kind of tie up here before we get on to our music and close?
No, I believe that's it. Did you have anything?
No, not really. As always, we want people to kind of come here and give us their comments. Craig, we appreciate your comment this week, and we love those types of comments where we can get into it. Keep the comments coming. You can post them on the show blog. It's messingaboutinships.com, and you could email us at podcasting@messingaboutinships.com. We also have a Skype account, which is MAIS Podcast, so you can get us that way. And all of our contact information is on the Messing About in Ships blog, which is messingaboutinships.com. John, you can get his stuff at gcaptain.com, and I'm over at seafever.org, and that's seafever.org. So we look forward to hearing from you. We didn't have anybody post themselves this week, actually, on the listener chart. I just checked a little while ago. So if you're listening and you haven't put yourself up there, please do. We could probably get about 20, 30 people up there already, and we know there's a lot more listeners, and love to see where you're from and hear from you. So look forward to getting you up there and reading your comments. And John, well, next time we talk, you'll be back in California with a family.
Yeah, that's fine. To it, so.
Well, good. Good. Well, as usual, enjoyed it. I look forward to next week, and have a safe journey home.
This week, John talked about mashups, and the music we're going to play is a mashup, actually. Heard it first on Adam Curry's Daily Source Code, and he got it from mashuptown.com, which bills itself as the official mashup supplier to Adam Curry's Daily Source Code. The band, or I should say the mashup artist, is Overdub. And the song is Come As the Starlight, and it's a mashup of Nirvana's Come As You Are and the Superman Lovers' Starlight. So I hope you enjoy it.